I was working at CERN, which is a high energy physics lab. It's a place in Switzerland where people come to from all over Europe, and in fact all over the world, to do these very complex experiments. And I was just working as a programmer. So I was I was part of a team supporting the people making the experiments, but helping people build particularly distributed systems, which would suck data out of the from the pit deep underground where the experiment was happening, up back up to the surface, and help control the physics devices and things. So that it was a very stimulating place to work in. It was a rather unruly place in that people came from different institutes to collaborate on the projects, and they came therefore with different sorts of computer and different sorts of ideas about what programs they wanted to run, and certainly different ideas about what sort of documentation system they wanted to use. So there were lots and lots of different help systems and, you know, online help systems and online documentation systems and things between the two. And any attempts which had been made to build a sort of mega system to build, sort of to bind them all into one great big lump had failed miserably, because all these attempts had been had forced you to use a particular piece of hardware, or forced you to translate your documents into a particular language and so on. So I was looking at this really from the point of view of somebody who's working in this very collaborative space. A lot of the people I worked with, the only people I could get to work on my projects, were other people in different universities across the world. So I needed to, as a collaborative space, a place where somebody could come, find out about the project, learn about it, contribute their own knowledge to it, add a piece. You know, so the idea of this hypertext space was that it would be a very collaborative thing from my point of view. But meanwhile, I realized that there was a huge amount of information which was actually out there already, which had to be incorporated. And it had to be incorporated without upsetting the people who managed it and the people who wrote it. So in other words, so hence this idea that you leave all the documentation systems in place, and then you develop a little shim layer, a little adapter for each one. You just shim it up with a bit of software until it's exposing what it knows in HTTP and HTML. So HTTP was designed as just a generic protocol for fetching information across from a web server, and the HTML was designed as the glue so that which would provide the links between documents. In fact, it turned out that a lot of documents ended up being actually written in HTML. So that was one of the things which happily surprised me, that it ended up useful for the end documents themselves as well.
And that kind of innovation seems like, did you realize what had happened? Were you able to pull these pieces together and say, oh my goodness, look what's happened? Or was it one of these things that has just, and now in hindsight, you go, oh my goodness, you know, sort of one of those V8 moments?
It was always it's always been a struggle, in fact. There's always been concerns that it would falter from some point, you know, that its growth would falter, that some one company or some one government would get control of it, or that we'd end up incorporating technology that had royalties payable. So I managed with Robert Caillou, my colleague, to get from CERN after 18 months a document saying, okay, CERN will not be charging royalties for this. Go ahead, for WWW technology. And that was a really important step, because there were various other projects which did not have that assurance, and they died, and everybody switched to the World Wide Web because it was royalty free. And since then, some of the most important negotiations since we set up, so 5 years later in 1994, we set up the World Wide Web Consortium. The consortium has been very important as a place where people can come together and talk about the new technology, and do that under an understanding that nobody involved is going to be charging royalties, keep it as a royalty free space. That's been a very important part of it being such an innovative space.
And just this unique opportunity where data, we have this amount of data, but all of a sudden can get at it in ways that we couldn't possibly get at it even a couple years ago.
Well, there are two we have really important movements which are reinforcing each other. One of them is that there's the movement of putting data, raw data, on the web as data. Well, it's been frustrating to those of us that have thought about it for a moment that of all the files on your computer, you know, that a lot of them are things like calendars or bank statements and things, which you don't just look at them, you don't just read them, you put them into some program, like a calendar program helps you then look at calendars in different ways. And on the web, when you see it, look at a calendar of something like your favorite band or your favorite football team, then it tends to be just a document, and you can cut and paste it into an email message maybe, but you can't look at it as a calendar. So there are calendar feeds, but that's only one type of data. And then there's this general frustration that people will publish a report which has a beautiful graph in it, but you can't get at the CSV file behind it. So this sort of now people are starting, whenever they see that, say, excuse me, could you put a link to the data? Hmm. And people are putting the data on it as data. So even though, you know, the comma-separated files are good, but also, of course, we have WCC standards for data. There's the RDS series of standards. So one of the movements is realizing that if you're going to put data, anything related to data, you should put the data on so that other people can manipulate it. And then there's this... there's the movement of open government data. So within governments, governments now across the world are realizing, actually, it's a win-win if we put the data on the web, because other people will do things with it we never imagined, and there'll be huge benefit. Transparency is one of the transparency, the government feeling that people feeling the government's more accountable is part of it, but also it's just the efficiency of the whole country running better, because all this data is available and you can use it when you're running a company and making decisions and so on.
All of a sudden you have real data to make the decisions instead of just depending on your gut.
Absolutely. Yeah. So this idea that when somebody says something, quotes some 30% of all pregnant women, are whatever, and you think, oh, yeah. So now if somebody says that on the web, you should be able to go back and find the data source they got it from. You should be able to look and drill down. And more importantly, you can look at other people's decisions, and when you can look at the data that they had and then compare it with something else that you know about. Look at the distribution of one phenomenon, and then you should be able to think, I wonder whether that's connected to this other phenomenon I know of. Let's look at those together. Let me do a scatter plot of those two. Let me see them both on the map. Oh, my goodness. You know, that's interesting. They do seem to be related. I wonder whether there's something causal there. So you can... fine, you can do lots of more powerful things with data by connecting to data together, two pieces of data that people have published completely independently. So the rule is, if you've got some data, just publish it as data. Don't publish it expecting or limiting what people will be able to do with it, because somebody will be able to do useful things with it by connecting it to things that you really have got no business knowing about, maybe, or never would have imagined being relevant to it.
It's always seemed to me that we fundamentally understood that information is power, but if it's powerful, we want to keep it to ourselves. It only seems out of these tools to access this data and share it, we've learned that, hey, the real power in information comes when it is shared, when you do collaborate with others. That's when the real power of information just really blossoms.
Absolutely. So the kudos now is flowing to the people who put their information out there. So it's really important. Of course, if you make a report and you've used somebody's data, very important. So ethically, you must put a pointer back. Actually, there's two really good reasons for putting a pointer back. One, you credit the person whose data you're using, so that when people get the credit for putting data up that other people use, then that's very important. That they get tenure, they get promoted, depending on where they are. And also, of course, it's important that you give a pointer back to where you got the data, so that people can borrow back and check on the provenance of that data, find out where's it come from, so if they're going to build an important decision on it, they can verify that it's come from sources that they want to trust for that, for example. And maybe they'll help find it. Maybe also help the original person who put the data out find errors in their data, which can be useful. So it's a changing ethos about what people are now claiming credit for. Nobody really is moving away from claiming credit for making a brilliant deduction from secret data.
Yeah.
It's now towards claiming credit for having contributed to the data out there, which is allowing the country to work more efficiently. And I was lucky enough to get a slot in the TED talk. Then looking at the different sorts of data, in that talk I touched on, there's scientific data and there's government data and there's community data like the wikis and there's OpenStreetMaps and so on. So there are these various categories of data. And looking at all of them, government data in a way is the lowest hanging fruit because particularly government data which does not involve information about individual people, of course. So we're taking the low hanging fruit here. It's data which has already been paid for by the taxpayer. So there's a tremendous sort of feeling that actually, hello, we the people paid for this. We the people should have access to it. And it happened that in the UK, prime minister to help them put data on the web, Gordon Brown, who was the prime minister at the time, asked, "What should the UK do to really make the best use of the internet?" And I said, "Well, put your data, all the government data on the web." And he said, okay, let's do it. And there was a six-month project with a lot of collaboration within the government at lots of different levels. In fact, there was a great competition between the US and the UK, which still continues, as to exactly whose data is better, best quality.
Yeah.
And who's got the most, and is it about quality or is it about quantity, and how much has been linked together. And now it's great to see mashups by the folks, by Jim Hendler at RPI, who have done mashups where they, for example, taken U.S. data about the U.S. funding developing countries and compared it with U.K. data about U.K. funding developing countries and be able to put a map where you can compare the funding from the two sources. And that's only possible because both governments have ended up putting up data in the same field. So it's allowed this comparison, which has not been possible before.
So how important are steps like building data.gov, which here in the U.S., there's a similar version in the U.K. and many countries around the world, many states in the U.S. now have similar things. How important is making that data available?
Making the data available is really important to the country, both for government transparency and also because if you're going to be running a business in a country, it's just better if you can get at things like the bus schedules and the train schedules and where knowing and if you know where the mailboxes are and where the train lines are. So there's just all kinds of things about that the government knows about the state of the country, which it's valuable to have on the web. So I think it's really important. So I think to have a central place, it's very nice. A place like data.gov or data.gov.uk in the UK, and as you say, various different countries are doing it. Because I think I think having a central index is valuable. It's also good to be able to compare different states, for example, and see where you're getting particular sorts of data from and where you aren't. It's also good to have community of developers, software developers, but also people who work for media, for newspapers, people who are analyzing it, have this community of people who are using the data and a community of people who are publishing the data so that the understanding of the technology, particularly the linked data technology. Linked data technology is very powerful. From the users, it means that you can pull in data from different sources about the same thing and compare it all. So I think we need groups in each city of people. There are groups in each city, in fact, of people who are excited about linked data technology and just talking to each other about latest tools they found, latest techniques and best practices and so on. So a five-star system is as follows. You give somebody one star, one huge star. The biggest star is just for making the information available at all because often there are huge barriers to it, psychological, bureaucratic barriers, but you may have to prize it out of somebody's hands who really wanted to control it, or you may have to find that it was in some very weird format and you're going to have to convert it from that. But you get the first star even if there is a moth-eaten copy of a table and it's been faxed to you and you've scanned it in. And you put it on the web. Okay, the data's now there. You've got over the political pressure to actually put it out there. But that's just one star. Then you get another star if it's actually in machine-readable form. If it's a spreadsheet rather than a scan of the table, then obviously that's really important if anybody's actually going to use it. Otherwise, somebody's going to have to retype it. Then you get the third star if it's in a non-proprietary fashion. It's not good for governments to put data on the web which expects people to buy some particular piece of software to use it. So you use an open standard. Once you put it on in a non-proprietary, machine-readable format, then you get the 3 stars. The 4 star you use for putting it out there in the linked data format, so you put that in RDF. That involves making up a URL for each of the concepts. What happens with the linked data is that you've got URLs not just for documents, but now you've got the URLs for concepts. So if you've got data about the population of towns, then you may have a URL for each town, and also you have a URL for the column that says this is population. And the advantages of that, when you do that, which is what you have to do when you use the RDF format, is you've created these URLs and other people can link to them. So somebody else can make a file somewhere else without telling you that says, oh, when the row in that table where they talk about Philadelphia, actually that's the same Philadelphia that we talk about in this table. So that when then somebody pulls their information about Philadelphia, it'll then automatically suck in all the data you've got in your table. And that's when you start to see the power of linked data. And the other way is, similarly with the columns, the way you've got a column like the population of towns. Actually, the population of a town may be a well-defined thing. Then somebody else may say, oh, we've got data about population too, and our URL means the same as yours. And then systems will be able to automatically, when somebody queries for towns of a given population, they'll be able to pull in the data from your file too. So suddenly your data will start pairing in other people's queries when it's been linked up. So that's why. So to get the 4 star is when you've published it in the format which allows people to link to it. And the 5th star you get when you've actually done some linking. So you actually talk to other people who are putting data out there, and you get together with them. You know, maybe you're putting data out in a state, and somebody in another state is putting data out. Maybe you're putting federal data out, and you start to look at whether people have been doing that already at the state level, or at the town level, for example, from that matter, or at another country. And when you see that, you see that they've already developed URLs for, say, for population or something, and then you find them and you make those links, so that when somebody pulls in your information, then they will automatically be led through to large amounts of information out there. And there's a huge cloud of data out there. So nowadays it's not too difficult to find some, you know, certainly for towns and things and concepts like population, there are URLs out there which you can use. The fact there's such a cloud of data out there makes it especially beneficial. There's great value in you getting that 5th star.
At the Gov2.0 Expo show, you compared this concept of linked open data to a bag of potato chips. I'm sorry, what?
The observation about the bag of chips is, if you look at a bag of chips, there's lots of different languages on it. In fact, there's lots of different vocabularies. There's some English on it where it says chips on the front. But when you turn it to the back, there is a nutrition fact.
Yeah, calories, facts. All sorts of stuff.
But there's nutrition facts in one language. They're understood by everybody who eats anything in the U.S., but they're not really, wouldn't be understood by somebody in a different country, because people in the U.S. expect to see certain things in nutrition facts, because that's standardized nationally. And there's a barcode, but the barcode is actually understood all over the world. You could scan that same barcode in any retail store on the planet, and it should work. So, and then there's allergen information. So the message from the bag of chips is that actually any message, any place where there's data transfer, data stored, you actually got different bits of data are in different vocabularies. Some of them are international vocabularies. Some of them are specific to a given field. Some of them are specific to a given place. And when somebody describes the road, the stuff about the road, or the stuff about a person, or the stuff about whatever it is, an event, it's going to be, part of it is going to be understood by anybody on the planet, and part of it is going to be understood by anybody in the U.S., and so on, and all these different communities. And the way the RDF, and what RDF allows you to do is, in one file, you put different terms come from these different sets of terms called ontologies, which come from different communities. And those communities often have already defined those terms, so it's not huge amount of effort to do it, and it's not a top-down thing. It's very much bottom-up. It's very much lots of little pieces loosely joined. It's very web-like sort of thing. So data doesn't sound very web-like, but in fact, when you do it bottom-up and when you connect it together and you use lots and lots of different terms from different ontologies in the same data file, then it becomes much more organic. And that's how the linked data world works, with a finite amount of effort giving you a very big benefit. So what's important is to get together with people in your field. If you're into roads, you know, then define roads. And take the existing standards that you've got in a given area, and map them into the linked data world. Map them into this RDF world, so that so in some cases we'd be happy at WCC to host new groups doing these things, particularly when they're fairly generic or where there's a particular vertical area which we think is really crucial. In other cases, it may be that that you've already got a group of people who are interested in this particular area and you've been working on standards, and those standards just need to be converted across, and you can do it within the existing social arrangements that you've got. But certainly WCC we've got an activity specifically for this technology in government, and we're just starting a new group about it.
That was going to be my question. How does this? Why is that important to government? Why make the connection there? If I'm a Fed out there, why do I care about, you know, these kinds of standards and all the? How does it help me do my job better?
Well, it's partly, I suppose, the web works by everybody, by you do your bit and everybody else will do yours, and that'll be very valuable. So if you put your data out there in linked data, it may not be that you actually see the benefit. However, you will find it'll be very beneficial to the fact that everybody else has. And in fact, for example, if before, when you wanted to find out about something which is actually under in another department, you may have had to make some official request from, you know, interdepartmental request of some form, and then you get the data, and maybe somebody will give you a paper brochure or some paper report they made, but you have to really sort of negotiate to actually get the data. Now, in the new world, where they put the data on the web publicly, that's actually very beneficial department to department. It actually really helps government itself just lubricate the communication, because then you can go to their public website, you can find their data, and you can pull it. When you pull the data and then you merge it with your own data, if you've got it all in linked data, if you've got linked data tools, then you can do this in a more powerful way. You can, if somebody has published it in just CSV files, you could do that too. But you know, it may be more effort. You can also, of course, there are lots of tools out there for converting to and from linked data. So also, when you've got a big pool of linked data, you can pull the comma-separated values things out, files out, and you can build dynamic websites based on this data and so on. Becoming aware of the new technologies is important, because now we do need more people to learn about them. They're not rocket science. They're fairly straightforward. They're sort of things, if you're a programmer, you can deal. There are lots of existing tools and libraries out there. So,
and these tools are increasingly easy to use to tap into those data sets.
Yeah, absolutely. And every now and again, you know, there are also companies producing tools out there, and they're all some of them are user interfaces, and some of them are back-end tools. So in your website, you can produce streams of data the website can be automatically generated from data streams and so on. It's a big world out there, and the good thing to do is to join an interest group and join a local meetup.
Yeah. I want to ask you to peer into your crystal ball and what do you see coming down the pike? But before you do that, talk a little bit about some of the challenges of getting this done, because I talk to feds all the time who say, making this data available. Okay, I have a full-time job. This is on top of that. So they talk about time. They talk about real concerns about, hold on, then I have to make sure all the data is just incredibly correct because I'm responsible for it. A lot of challenges in making this data available.
Well, this is why it's great to have groups of people who are in this situation talking to each other about the sort of the solutions they've found. Yeah, well, so one of the golden rules is the when it comes to the time, is really this should become part of the way that you do everything else anyway. It shouldn't be an extra activity. So if you are producing a report every quarter, and if to do that you produce a spreadsheet, then actually then it should be made as easy as possible for you to upload the spreadsheet every time, or every quarter or every week, up onto some website where it can be part of where it can be picked up as part of the open data movement. When it comes to the very good point is, what about the data quality? If I put this out there, surely I'll be held to a higher standard. Well, not necessarily. The really important thing is for you to be open about what the quality is. No data is perfect. And so nobody expects data to be perfect, but they do like to have metadata about it. So when you put it out there, say, look, this is, we've collected this over the last few years. We had to guess January because we lost the figures for January, so we've interpolated between December and February. Sorry about that. All that sort of information. Has this been checked? What's it been used for? What sort of level has it has the individual data cells been used, or have you actually only used the aggregate? Do you only trust the aggregate? All sorts of, just say if a friend that you happen to know in another department came to you and asked you, hey, what's the status of this? Just be open about it. And when you use other people, if other people put data out there, respect that they're doing this as part of their job. This is not an extra job. They produce the data for one purpose. If you use it for another purpose, then it may be very beneficial. It may be, you may discover something staggeringly new, but also you may find that they've got the issues with their data, and there's no reason why you don't have any claim on them raising the quality of the data unless you negotiate. So
it might actually improve the data sets.
There has to be give and take and an understanding of setting expectations and then not expecting people to and only holding people up to those expectations.
I was talking to Earl Devaney, the head of the Recovery Accountability and Transparency Board. They run, of course, recovery.gov, and they had the situation where, there were incorrect congressional districts, wrong congressional districts, which were part of their data set, and, there was, we in the media made a big thing about it, and look, hey, they're missing congressional districts, and I asked him about it, and he said, it's now fixed. We didn't know about it before. We do now. It's been fixed. That's not in the data. We've improved the data as a result of this transparency. But his general thing about transparency is, if you believe that this is public data, you have to get over being embarrassed about it. Their data isn't perfect. And making it publicly available is very powerful. And there's going to be these kinds of things that come out of that and essentially get over it.
Very good response, and of course, so you in the media, I think, as you say, very much sort of have control over the sort of tone you use with these things. There are various certainly newspapers that have been very involved in the open data movement. Particularly, The Guardian in the UK has had a free our data campaign for years and years. And so what they have done is they have had these hackathons where they have 24 hours or 48 hours and people, they just invite programmers in to use the data and see what they could do with it. Mm-hmm. They've managed to, when some rather obscure and potentially incomprehensible spending data was released very recently in the UK, they produced a great interface to it to make it easier to understand. And So it's really I think it's important for the media to get involved in this data as a two-way street. Not just whining about it if it doesn't look good enough, or using it to embarrass people, but using it to actually produce a really interesting, critical, extra, enhanced, richer view of this country. And being part of a feedback cycle, I think that's right. The fact that the critical thing was that the data was not so good before, but it's better. Remember, there are places like the OpenStreetMap, OpenStreetMap.org. It's a map where every dot has been put in by somebody who's contributed it, and has been perused by other people who live near that area, and it works like a wiki. So you can have data sets where there's no original government data at all. It's just put out there, and then people ask, and then you ask people to fill it in, and it can be filled in. And so you can even do that to yourself, Chris. So, let me know when there's a little bit of data out there that you're responsible for.
Oh, my goodness. One last question, and you've been so generous with your time. Peer into your crystal ball, and what are you looking forward to in a positive sense? What do you see on the horizon? And also some of the things that we need to be wary about.
I think, I don't do crystal ball gazing in the sense of what I predict. I generally tend to, it's definitely what I wish for.
I don't do predictions because I'm always wrong. So,
an Aladdin's lamp or something.
Yeah.
What I wish for is for the spread of this open data to continue, and for it to be a seed, so it's not just government data out there, but bit by bit, one by one, enterprises will realize, our competitors have got all sorts of data about their products out there. We should have data about our products out there. So we're seeing this then spread to industry, data about products, data about up and down the supply chain, much more openness about where the holdups are going to be, everything making the world more efficient place, so that instead of having to browse websites to go and buy a set of tires, I can just write a program to constantly find the best deal for tires for my fleet of trucks, for example. So we're spreading from industry also through to scientific data, just as the National Institute of Health has been saying that you must make your data available if you get funding from us. I hope that spreads to generally across the scientific sector. As Vince Cerf said the day before yesterday, you ain't seen nothing yet. Really, this is we've seen, this is only the tip of the iceberg in government data. And it's the UK and the US are leading the rest of the world, but there's an awful lot of countries which are going to be coming out with government data too. And it's only the tip of it's only the tip of the iceberg when it comes to data. So really, there's a huge amount. So what I wishing to see more and more powerful, very powerful tools. As there's more and more data out there, I'm going to need more and more powerful, very sexy human interfaces for slicing and dicing it and moving between a map view of it and a timeline view of it and going into a sort of genetic biopathway view of data depending on what it is, and being able to sort of career through this data and cut it down and aggregate it very effectively and then explore it and look for examples and then generalize those things. I think that we need lots of I'm looking forward to very, very exciting things in the future. On the worries side, always, I suppose, on the internet in general, the concerns about countries, blocking sites, of course. Also, whenever we have concerns about possibly corporations blocking sites or generally messing with what I can see as an individual, so keeping the net open, making sure we have open standards, making sure it doesn't become dominated by either by proprietary royalty bearing technology And also making sure that it's neutral. So that, if you put some good data out there and I've got a connection to the internet, that I can get that data and there's nobody in the middle who's saying, oh, no, we want to charge you something special for getting that particular data. So an open standards and a neutral network are really important things. Data which can be used by somebody to do something criminal or for terrorism, then they will have a huge, much more incentive to get at it, and they will tend to get at it. If necessary, they'll type it back in when a man in the street wouldn't be, or somebody doing a child doing homework would not be prepared to type all that data back in. So if you make the data difficult to get at, then I think, in fact, you're playing into the bad guy's hands. You mean that law enforcement people, students doing projects, people who are looking for problems with the way we're doing things are being hampered, and the bad guys will be the first to get at it. So certainly an understanding of with particular data sets of what could people do with this data is something. Are the ways in which they could actually find out things about individual people? Are the ways in which they'll be finding out sort of military things which are military secure? Obviously, we have to be aware of that. But in general, we also have to make sure that we have got the tools, the better tools. For doing this stuff, we need to be funding students to really think far out, 10, 20 years far out. We need to be funding our students to dream about what will be a really great way of dealing with this data and analyzing it, so that we're right up there spotting the trends and doing reasonable things about them before the bad guys find a way of exploiting them.
One of my biggest frustrations is around the cybersecurity issue. There doesn't seem to be the kind of collaboration about how we can come together to solve some of the real challenges that are out there the way there are on some other issues.
Certainly sharing that the problem exists, I think, is very important. One of the things that W3C does is looks at when we need to get involved in security. For example, I was noticed in the consortium, people pointed out that having a padlock at the top of the browser to say you have a secure connection isn't actually any good. It just makes you feel good. But but really, you need to have a little green place up there which tells you who it is you're securely connected to. What's the name on the certificate, please? So that was so that led to a certain amount of drawing up the best practices and pushing browsers to become more secure in that area. So I would encourage anybody who's got ideas about what we need to do for security on the web, both with normal web pages and documents, and also with data, and also with web applications, of course, which are a whole new, very big area where there are lots of security. There's a lot of security work being done at the moment. So do get involved with W3C. Do get involved in the working groups because we need your expertise, and we need your use cases and your point of view.